Welcome to Shattering Myths, a program devoted to the largest segment of society. To those of you who have come to realize that all of the world's religious, political, economic, and military institutions are corrupt, especially counterproductive. I am Yada. Our number, if you'd like to join us anytime over the next 2 hours, toll-free, 877-376-45. Today, we're going to continue to waddle through the quagmire that is Pauline Christianity. We are in the midst of the second chapter of Paul's first letter, that to the Galatians, where he is in the midst of telling us that the testimony of the disciples is absolutely irrelevant and meaningless to him, of no value whatsoever, distinguishing Pauline Christianity from Yahusha and Yahweh in every possible way. In the second hour, we're going to talk with I.Q. al-Rasuli. And our topic today is going to be the oldest fragments of the Quran as they were discovered just recently in England, of all places. Hello, Kirk. Good morning.
How are you?
Good. It's early out there on the left coast, isn't it?
Yes, sir. Indeed it is.
I want to return to where we were on Paul, unless you have a introductory comment or question.
Not really. I was disturbed by the local rag, the guy who one time we picked on his Christianity letter again, his article in the newspaper, and this week he's talking about embracing the Muslims and. Why we should worship with them and break.
Oh, we should, huh?
Make friends. And,
yeah, and why should we, first of all, why would one want to worship the Creator? I mean, think of how disgustingly insecure, mm-hmm. how warped the personality and character of the Creator would have to be to create a being to worship him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that is so unbelievably disgusting, so warped, so twisted, so demeaning of God. You know, Adolf Hitler wanted to be worshipped.
True.
Augustus Caesar wanted to be worshipped. Julius Caesar wanted to be worshipped. Muhammad wanted to be worshipped. Mao. I mean, the most twisted people in history. I think, you know, if I were to have my hierarchy of perverse people, I'd have Hadrian in my top five. Hadrian was so twisted on wanting to be worshipped that he renamed Jerusalem, after himself, and was going to build a monstrous temple with a statue in the center of it to himself. I mean, men who are twisted want to be worshipped. God wants to be worshipped by his creation? Are you kidding?
I haven't used the clip in a while, so I'm really excited about it. But I have a clip that sums up what that guy said for you.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone is now dumber for having listened to it.
Yeah. Is there any reason he's not the world's top producer of radio?
Oh, I cannot imagine. And I would give him the vote for world's top producer. Okay, so first of all, this idiot of a pastor who took pen to paper and turned it into a publication because he was proud of what he was saying, told everyone who would believe him that we should worship God together. And you know, I'm just flabbergasted by the religious notion of worshiping God. You know, Christians have worship service.
Right.
Why would you think for a moment that God wanted to be worshipped? Where in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms does he say, I want to be worshipped?
Well, I think we did a whole program on looking up every word that's translated worship, and there aren't,
there aren't any.
Not by the definition.
No.
Worship, no.
No, not one. And where did Yahusha say, yeah, worship me? You know, your disciples, I don't know why you're walking along here with me, why you're sitting down here with me, why you're sleeping next to me. You ought to be groveling at your feet, worshiping me. Where did he say that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
When Yahweh met Abram in Babylon, wasn't the first thing he said to Abram, would you please get down on your knees and start worshiping me?
Yeah, kiss my ring.
Yeah. What about when he found the old codger, Moshe, tending sheep out there in the Arabian Peninsula, and said, hey, you know, my name is Yahweh. Let's go and honor a promise I made a long time ago. Let's go liberate my children from the crucible of Egypt. And was his first instruction to a command to Moshe, you get down on your knees, old fella, and you start worshiping me.
Service, yeah. Before our journey, let's start with a worship service.
Yeah. I mean, just put it in human construct for a moment. Let's say that we were creative enough that, we can. I'm not, but my son probably could. Either one of my sons is engineers. We're going to create a robot, which is the closest thing that we humans could create to life. That we're going to create a robot, and we're going to program that robot to bow down to us and tell us how wonderful we are. Oh, robot creator, you are so wonderful. I worship you, oh, robot creator. I love you, oh, robot creator.
Very good. Channel your robot voice.
Now, can you imagine how twisted you would have to be for that to cease to be funny? After about the third time that you, I mean, I could see doing that as a party gag, and you bring your buds over, you know, to watch the ball game and have a brewski and some popcorn, and you wheel the robot out, and R2-D2, you know, rolls out in front of you and turns to you and says, oh, robot creator, you are so wonderful, I praise thee, oh, robot creator. And, you know, the guys are going to just laugh their socks off at how ridiculous that is. And yet, every religion has us doing that to the Creator God of the universe. Wow. So demeaning.
Well, then Muhammad, he had everybody bowing 50 times a day when he
started. Oh, yeah.
But there was no time to do anything else. So.
That's right. Yeah. Except Muhammad himself, of course, who never did it.
No.
Why would he? Because he's the God.
He's Muhammad. I mean,
yeah. You know, I love this too, that we should get down on our knees to lift God up in praise and prayer. I worked out an hour and a half today. For a 60-year-old guy, I'm in pretty decent shape. I can lift my dog up. I can lift my wife up. I don't think I could lift God up.
I don't think so.
No. But I know for certain he can lift me up. All right, so the first thing is the stupidity of Christian pastors telling us that we should worship God, we should have a worship service, and the idiocy of the faithful Christians, oh, yeah, let's go worship God, okay, I'm going to go to worship service now. My God, he is a really, really insecure deity. He needs me to go in there and worship him. Okay, so that's stupid point number one. And now his second point was.
I don't have the article with me, but to paraphrase a little bit, he was. We need to. He's trying to embrace Islam.
Okay.
And the Muslims, and we should break bread with them. We should go over and worship with them, assuming that all gods are the same God. So.
Okay, so Allah is the. Well, he doesn't even know who the real God is, does he? Does he ever use?
Well, you know, we did his article earlier. This is a guy who writes an article, very heavy promoter. So he's not a preacher that I'm aware of, but he's terribly religious. It's the religious column,
right?
And he is very, very Christian. And then we exposed him last time and said he didn't know who God was. He didn't know why this.
Oh yeah, he was the one that wrote the Ten Commandments, right? Oh yeah,
same guy.
Same guy. The Ten Commandments.
So now,
which by the way, were written in what book? Where did we find the Ten?
The Torah, last time I heard.
Oh, the Torah, yeah. And what did the founder of his religion say about the Torah?
He said it's complete and perfect. And
the founder, the creator of the universe, says it's complete, perfect, and simple to understand for the open-minded, and it will restore the soul. That's what the creator of the universe said. But the founder of the Christian religion, what did he have to say about it?
He said you should ignore it because, and he gives you the freedom to walk away from it, so you need to be free from God, in his words.
Yeah, he called it enslaving of the flesh, unable to stay.
It's a virtue.
Yeah, and use the Greek word paneros, from which we get pornography, to describe it. Okay, so this is the same guy that doesn't see the hypocrisy in him promoting something from the Torah in a religion that is adverse to the Torah. So this guy, he knows the name of the Islamic God, doesn't he?
He should.
I mean, you couldn't write about Islam and not know that.
Used it in the article, but I've seen other articles where he has. So
okay. Well, I don't think there's anyone who would dare write about Islam, who would even pretend to be addressing Islam, that did not know the name of the Islamic God. I mean, how could you not know the name of the Islamic God in today's world, where Allahu Akbar is the confession of every Muslim who commits a terrorist act? Okay, so he knows the name of the Islamic God. He does not know the name of the actual God. He doesn't even know the name of the person that his religion is misnamed after.
Uh-huh.
He would never write Yahusha. Okay. In fact, if you wrote Yahusha, you would know the name of God, because Yahusha contains the name of God.
Uh-huh.
Yahweh. Okay. So without knowing the actual name of God, he claims that the God, we worship the same God, getting past worship now for a moment, the same. So where's the one place that Yahweh can never go?
Sheol.
Yeah, the place of separation. That's what Christians would call hell, right?
Mm-hmm.
And where does Allah spend all of his time?
He lives there.
Yeah, in hell.
Torturing his victims.
Right. Yeah. Does Yahweh ever torture anyone?
No.
Well,
even his separation is maybe torture to their brain, but he's not physically there doing to them.
Yeah. And is Allah shown doing anything other than terrorizing people and torturing people?
That's his sole purpose.
That is his sole purpose. I don't think they're the same. Does Allah demand being prayed to?
Absolutely.
Yeah, one never does. Does the Quran say that it confirms the Torah? Doesn't it say that many times?
Yes.
Yeah. And does it ever quote the Torah?
Not if it does, it doesn't do it correctly.
Hmm.
It might be the Talmud or something.
Yeah. Does the Quran have Arabs or Jews as the chosen people?
Not the Jews.
Yeah, and then the Quran, isn't it an Arab that all of a sudden is the star prophet when 100% of those in the Torah are Yehudim?
Mm-hmm.
Israelites?
Hmm.
And is the test that Yahweh establishes for whether or not somebody is speaking for him that A, they use his name and only his name? Did Muhammad ever use Yahweh's name?
Never.
Is the second test that your presentation of historical events has to be exactly as things have occurred?
Absolutely.
Doesn't Muhammad have fictitious creation and conflicting creation accounts and fictitious historical accounts about civilizations and cultures that never existed?
Oh, he just rambles on. He changes every time. He changes gods from time to time.
Yeah, he does. Yes, three or four of them.
He settles on one he likes.
Yeah, doesn't the test in the Torah say that if you're speaking for Yahweh, that you not only have to have prophecy, but your prophecies have to be 100% correct? Doesn't the Quran say that Muhammad was not a prophet, was incapable of predicting the future?
Mm-hmm.
Did he ever have a single prophecy that he got right?
No.
Doesn't the Torah say that if you're speaking for God, what you say has to be wholly and completely consistent with what God has told us, because he does not change?
Never.
And isn't the Quran just a complete, they isn't it the complete antithesis of what God said? Therefore, completely changed?
Yeah, well,
I mean, how can any informed and rational person say they are the same God when their nature, character, disposition, propensities, and testimony are the opposite of one another?
And so why would you want to go over there and with someone and join in their services?
Yeah. Is a slug a platypus?
No.
No. I mean, the difference between the Quran and the Torah is infinitely greater than a slug and a platypus. I mean, come on, folks. Good God, are Christians stupid? I mean, just think for a moment.
You know, this is a funny thing that just occurred to me over the break. Terry was telling me, my wife was telling me that when she was a young girl and she mm-hmm. was Catholic, they were not even allowed to sing a Protestant song that was written by some Protestant person. And I was thinking about how the Christianity's all these multi divisions of Protestants and divisions of Protestantism mm-hmm. are all so jealous and guarded of their turf.
Yes,
you
of
know,
course.
Which is,
yeah.
And for so for some religious person, probably Catholic, I believe in to be, would even suggest that they worship together with some other religion is mind blowing compared to where it would have been even 30 years ago.
Yeah,
this one world religion movement is embracing this is just absurd.
Yeah. I suspect that it's a product of political correctness.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Where so many people have been indoctrinated into not being judgmental about mm-hmm. not exercising good judgment about repeating as a parrot inaccurate platitudes to advance a culture that is being designed to be controlled, to be uniformed, to being dumbed down. And that's all people seem capable of doing. So when they're told, well, we all worship the same God, they're all Abrahamic religions, Muhammad was a prophet, you know, the Quran is a godly book.
Yeah, they're all Abrahamic. Yeah,
right.
All Abraham.
Yeah. You know, all religions, like a wheel, all point to the same God. And,
well, actually,
they really do. But you've got to then say wannabe God. Yeah. You know, I actually look at religions as a wheel. And when you turn a wheel, which if you put a sleeve on one of the spokes of a wheel, and then you were say on a bike and you're pedaling that bike.
Mm-hmm.
Is the sleeve on that spoke going to come to the center where they all connect, or is it going to go to the outside of the wheel?
Goes to the outside.
Yeah, centrifugal force. Yeah, it goes to the wannabe gods. Yahweh was very clear on this point. So let's paraphrase him as opposed to cite our own conclusions. He said in a book named Salvation, Hosea. Hosea, if you want to look it up in your Bible. He said, my people are destroyed. They cease to exist because of their ignorance. My people are destroyed. They cease to exist because of their ignorance. He went on to say, because you have forgotten my Torah, I will forget your children. Because the Torah happens to be the only means to God. If you don't value the Torah, if you don't study the Torah, if you don't observe the Torah, if you don't listen to the Torah, if you aren't instructed by the Torah, if you do not learn from the Torah, God is unknowable. His guidance to his home and to participating in his covenant is not discernible. And so God says, if you are going to forget my Torah and you're not going to teach it to your children, they're not going to know me. You do not know me. And there's no reason, therefore, for me to know you. My people are destroyed. They cease to exist because of their ignorance. It's one thing that this pastor wrote something that is wholly ignorant, that A, we ought to worship God together, and B, that Muslims and Christians worship the same God, and we ought to break bread together. This is wholly and completely ignorant. And it's one thing for the writer of this article to have written this. It's another thing entirely for the newspaper to print it. It's another thing altogether for Christians not to question it. But, Kirk, isn't it the same thing that really drives right to the heart of religions like Christianity? It's so obvious that what Paul wrote is untrue. I mean, this passage we've been considering where he discounts the testimony, not just discounts, he tosses away as useless, as meaningless, the testimony of the disciples. After he's called the, what Christians refer to as the Old Testament pornography. When he did that, there is a zero possibility that he could be speaking for the God who authored the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, or for the diminished manifestation of that God, Yahusha, who chose and instructed and then authorized and empowered the disciples. And yet they can't figure it out. So their souls are destroyed. They cease to exist because they've chosen ignorance and faith over knowing.
You know, when you first started writing this, questioning Paul, and gathering up all this information and research, and you were talking about your talking about the book when you just began on the other radio program.
Mm-hmm.
I remember listening and going, you know, before I ever read the book, there were just after two or three messages. I mean, I came to the conclusion, well, finally, I can just write off Paul completely.
Finally.
You know,
right.
It was only two or three things. And then it was, I remember JB calling in one time, my friend James called in.
Yeah.
And he said something about the, Deuteronomy, and this is the test of the, of, if you're a prophet, da 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 da. You're speaking for God, and that sealed the, you know, that sealed it again. So
right.
I never needed to read the book per se. I read it, and I read the first edition, and then the second, much more expanded thing that's now available. And it was just piling on and piling on, and after you get over your guilt of buying this stuff without reading it, then you just dismiss it. It's so easy to dismiss.
Yeah.
So and with it, Christianity. When you get right down to it, I mean, there's no Christianity without him.
No, and what's I think well the cause here for someone like this dunderhead pastor to write for the newspaper.
Well, I'm not sure he's a pastor, but, I mean, he's certainly a layperson and a promoter of
Christianity. So for someone to write that is one thing. But the fact is that every Christian that is a Christian because they're either ignorant or irrational. One of the two. Now, they don't have to be ignorant on all things. And they don't have to be irrational in every aspect of their lives. But as it relates to their religion, they have to either be ignorant, irrational, or both. And why would you choose to be ignorant and irrational or irrational on something that, from your own perspective, would determine the fate of your soul and the fate of your the souls of your loved ones?
You think you would be horrified. That thought should horrify you.
Right. Why would you have your daily activities, your choices you make in life, guided by a religion that you are either ignorant of or irrational about? Why would you make donations to a religion that you're either ignorant of or irrational about? And folks, let's just call a spade a spade. It is so obvious that Christianity, particularly Pauline Christianity, is in conflict with Yeah, it was Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. And that virtually every claim that Paul makes is wrong, including this one where he discounts the testimony of Yahusha's personally chosen and personally taught and personally commissioned disciples. That you either have to be ignorant of the realization that Paul just did this, or irrational, not willing to make the logical connection or conclusion regarding it.
Can you find Yahweh anywhere that's not in except the Torah?
No. No, as a matter of fact, you know, a Christian would say, well, you know, God walked among us, so we can see him through Jesus. Well, first of all, there was no one named Jesus. So if you don't know his name, my God, you don't know him. Now, but second of all, 100% of those who came to see Yahweh through Yahusha did so the way that Yahusha enabled. And what was that?
Reading the Torah.
Yeah, he cited the Torah, didn't he?
Mm-hmm.
And every time somebody says, you know, I don't get it, you know, who are you? What are you doing? How do I save someone? You know, what's the answer to the question? You know, what should we do? What's the most important statement? Well, you know, how do I have a guarantee of getting into heaven? No matter what question they asked him, including, who are you? He cited the Torah as it's found in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms.
That's how he started his 3 years.
Correct.
He opened up Isaiah.
You're right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Torah taught, instructed from it. And the longest public address that he ever made, his first public address, the entire beginning to end, chapters 5, 6, and 7 of Matanyah, Matthew, are devoted to letting us know that he's the literal embodiment of the Torah and that nothing in the Torah will be annulled so long as the heavens and earth exist, and that it will all be fulfilled. And there's so much of the Torah that has yet to be fulfilled. It's going to be, but over the next 1,020 years or so.
Reading Yadayah also allowed me to dismiss preachers, because I thought my goal was to find a theologian or somebody who really knew the thing to explain it, because you couldn't seem to understand the Christian Bible, or the English Bible, I should say. It was so confusing to me, other than three or four books. I mean, it seemed to be...
Well, King James had, his pastor talked about, or writer talked about, breaking bread together. Well, the breaking of bread is a reference to the bread of Pesach and Matzah. And you notice the bread of Pesach and Matzah is the same. Mm-hmm. It is unyeasted bread.
Right.
And so the bread of Pesach and Matzah, the same, unyeasted bread, and it has... Yahusha breaking that bread and identifying himself with matzah.
Right.
Even Pesach's reference to matzah. All of it is tied together. It's all interconnected. And to not see that, you know, as I say, the first King James translation and quotes, had him celebrating Easter, the pagan holiday. You know, even in the oldest Greek manuscripts, it's a transliteration of Pesach was written there, Passover. And they wanted it to be Easter to support their religion. And then they wanted it to call it the Last Supper. Is there any reference to a Last Supper?
No.
No, it's Pesach. Is there any reference to a communion or Eucharist as the Catholics and Christians do it with their little round wafer and grape juice?
Absolutely not.
Wasn't what he was doing a celebration on the Passover meal, at the precise timing of the Passover meal, as the sun set on the 13th day, beginning the 14th day of Abib? Was he not celebrating the Pesach meal at the time the Pesach meal was to be celebrated and eating unyeasted bread and lamb, drinking wine, all in celebration of the Pesach meal?
Yeah.
Didn't even tell his disciples, why don't you go and get the lamb so that we can celebrate? I'm excited. I'm yearning to. I'm desiring to celebrate Pesach with you. Isn't that what God tells us? I want to celebrate Pesach with you. Go get the lamb.
Well, the day starts in the evening, I believe.
Yes. And
to perform that.
And it's all the testimony is there for exactly that, and yet they haven't got a clue as to why, since Yosha celebrated Pesach and was desirous of doing so with them, that shouldn't they do the same thing? And shouldn't they avoid celebrating the goddamn festival of Easter with its holy and completely pagan roots? Last Supper, my behind. No Last Supper. The passage that you cited a moment ago, Kirk, is the is so important. It's one of Dode's Psalms, and it says that the Torah is perfect and complete. And it says that the Torah is fully capable of restoring your soul. And then it concludes by saying that the Torah is easy to understand if you're open-minded. Now, I suspect that the problem with Christians is that their minds are not open. That political correctness and religious faith collectively have closed their minds to anything that is counter to their religion or to their politics. And so the last place that any of them would go, even if they could muster an open mind for answers, is the Torah. The last place they would go to look for salvation. And yet, it's the place where Yahweh says you'll find it. How is it that the Torah could be of the flesh and enslaving and incapable of saving if Yahweh says that it's perfect and complete? How could there be a New Testament if the testimony in the Torah is perfect and complete?
An impossibility. It should be totally contradicting.
Right. Now, one of the things that you mentioned earlier, Kirk, is something that that is probably frightening for those who are still clinging to Christianity, who, at least by the fact that they're listening to this program, are at least of the realization, okay, there's a lot of stupid stuff in Christianity, like the 6,000-year-old universe,
true,
like the Trinity, which is a Babylonian myth, and God in three personas.
Or just the Easter. I mean,
Easter, Christmas, Sunday worship, a Holy Ghost, a fellow named Jesus, a last name of Christ, a book named Bible, letters from Paul that are
contradictory.
I mean, if your mind's the least bit open and you're saying, but, you know, if I leave this religion, then what? You know, that's been my perspective, my moral compass. That's been that's my identity. That's my association.
My definition of good people.
Right. My definition of good people. Oh, my God, if I leave this, I'll be left, you know, with this huge hole and will somehow be estranged.
And we all have friends who, when they've been exposed, have told us just that.
Yeah, we have.
I know you have, and I know I have.
Yeah. And the thing that I'd like to convey is that on the other side, if you go two steps as opposed to one step, if the one step is you simply let go, distance yourself of Pauline Christianity, of an allegiance to country and politics and military, what you'll find on the other side of that is that rather than somehow being deprived of the things that you've loved, you'll feel this enormous release. And you'll feel dirty at first because you say, how in the world was I so corrupted by this? Why did I allow this rubbish to control my life? And so there's this enormous release. But there's a second aspect, if you'll go the second step. And then once you've distanced yourselves from these lies, these counterproductive and conflicting lies, if you'll open your mind a bit longer and consider the Torah and what Yahweh had to say, well, then what you'll find to replace the lie is the most wonderful, encompassing, uplifting, empowering, trustworthy truth, magnificently presented. You'll find you can engage in a personal relationship with the creator of the universe. And I'm going to tell you, I've had a lot of friends along life's way, as I'm sure you have, Kirk. And I'm sure you love your wife and your wife loves you. But the reality is that a relationship with Yahweh is better than any of that.
It is.
And being part of the covenant family is better than even having your own family. And so what you gain ultimately, if you'll take that second step, is extraordinary. All you lose is that which is corrupting, deceitful, false, misguiding. And what you gain?
Life, freedom.
Life, yes, freedom, empowerment, enrichment, and fellowship.